what I wanted to speak about, I think I'll just postpone. I wanted to speak about community development. I think I mean those who aren't here to be here, Jagatananda's parents and brother, and Paul Shivan, their home. Of course, Shakti is helping our only get ready. So, we all know that today is a very special day, right? Just as you were walking in the front driveway, came to know it's a very special day. So, maybe we'll speak a little bit about birthdays in Krishna consciousness. There's a whole chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto dedicated to the movements of the living entities and describing what that spirit soul's experience is within the womb of the mother. Verse after verse after verse after verse after verse describing how difficult, not just uncomfortable, but how very, very difficult it is for that living entity who's going to take birth while within the womb of the mother. Very, very difficult. Not only difficult for the mother, very difficult for the living entity within the womb of the mother. So difficult that the living entity sometimes becomes conscious like external consciousness. It's described in the Vedic literature, there's three states of consciousness and variations under those categories. There's awake, there's variations under awake. There's sleeping, variations under sleeping. And there's deep sleep, like under anesthesia, or during the time of the cosmic annihilation, the living entities, their consciousness is suspended, susupti. Something like the life that's within a seed, it's just dormant. It's there. And it can stand in a bag, or on a shelf, or in a jar, or in storage for a long time. But then when water and light come, it sprouts. Because there's this life inside the seed, but it's dormant. So human consciousness is in these three stages. And the life is there within the womb of the mother. Our Vedic scriptures teach us from the moment of conception, or see it the other way around, if there's no conception, there's no life, and if there is conception, there's life. In a very moment of conception, conception just means the emulsion, using Prabhupada's language, the emulsification of the male and female mix, and the body, driven by the life force of the soul within, is then, begins, the body begins to develop. And consciousness undergoes some states of transformation, just as the embryo within the mother's womb undergoes some states of physical transformation. It's in correlation to the consciousness. So, within a certain stage, within the womb, some living entities, not all, some living entities, Bhagavatam describes, become awake as if, like, you know, we're awake. And they're quite aware of the very uncomfortable condition that they're in. a condition that if we were subjected to in our awake state of consciousness, we would lose consciousness. We would become unconscious. The difficulty is so severe and non-stop. So much so the living entity consciously prays to God, basically, please get me out of the circumstance. I'll do anything. Please get me out of the circumstance. Prayers to God are given in the Bhagavad Gita. The living entity takes birth. And not only for the mother, but for the child taking birth, the pain the Bhagavatam describes is so extreme, they forget everything. And in our Western, I guess you could call it culture of no culture. There's a baby shower. Something happens before and then the baby comes in. The Bhagavatam describes that in the arms of the mother and relatives and, you know, the pleasant talk, that the living entity becomes so enamored, forgetting the painful condition completely, with the allure that this is going to be a happy circumstance. Although they can't express themselves, they're difficult, they experience pain, they can't say what it is that they want, or what the problem is. So, we have our, in various cultures, there's the ritual of the joy of birth and the sorrow of death. And the Vedic perspective is, these are just transition points. The samskaras in Vedic culture are just observing points of transition of the soul as the soul is journeying through different stages of body. Prior to conception, within the womb of the mother, namakarana at the time of birth, rain ceremony, marking transitions where the child is dependent upon the mother and becoming independent from the mother by taking rain rather than milk of the mother. And upanayana and so on. There's different stages for the transition points of the soul. And we celebrate, in our Western culture, we celebrate birth and we mourn for death. But the Vedic culture is just seeing these are just transitions, stages. And from the Bhagavatam perspective, everything is resting upon, the value of something is resting upon consciousness. Just like in a morning Bhagavatam class, a couple of days ago we were discussing the classic theological question, how does something material come from something spiritual? God is all spiritual. There are different varieties of the question. God is all spiritual. How does this thing, which is material, come from God who is all spiritual? The materialists have an easy answer. It doesn't. But the theists have different theologies about how it happens. But it goes the other way too. How can you create spiritual consciousness by manipulation of matter? And once you're in material consciousness, we'll come back to the birth and death thing. Once you're in material consciousness, how do you get out? Because anything that you do, it involves material activity, doing things with material instruments, acting upon matter. How can you create something spiritual out of something material? The answer is you can't create something spiritual out of something material. Then maybe the answer is do nothing and just bring it to a close. But you can't do nothing either, because there's a soul and the soul is active and the soul is always doing something. If you literally try to do nothing, the soul will leave, go to another place, because it has to do something. So doing nothing doesn't work, doing something doesn't work, and as long as you do something, the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, as long as you do something, you're bound to the fruits of that something. And that bondage means another birth, where you're impelled by the previous activities and the modes of nature with which you've associated to do more activities to bring you more bondage, to bring you another birth. And it's this repeat. You can't do, you can't not, as they said, damn if you do and damn if you don't. You can't do, you can't not do. What to do? How do you regain the spiritual position? How do you enter that place once again? Once you're here? Important theological question, isn't it? And it goes the other way around. How did this come from that? How do you get something material out of something spiritual? You either say that something spiritual is false, or you say that this is false. And some people do that. There is no God. Or the impersonalists say, all there is Brahman, and this is false. Just like wave your hand and dismiss it. It doesn't exist. Of course, my hand doesn't exist either. The wave of the hand doesn't exist, and nothing exists. Nothing exists. Except Brahman. That's an interesting approach. But then such persons busy themselves in material activity that leads to bondage and repeated birth and death, where they get more bodies and more activities and more bondage and more birth and death. So what's the answer? What do you do? Close your eyes. Hope it gets better, right? At least be good. As long as you gotta be here and, you know, be good. One devotee, just sent me a Christian version of that message. Be good. Interesting. Taking things from the Bible and translating it into modern language and putting a modern picture and basic messages, be good. It's better to be good than to be bad. You gotta be here and be in bondage. But that's from the Vedic perspective, that's like being in a first-class prison cell instead of solitary confinement, prison cell. You're still in prison. And even if your theology is, if you're good, you'll go, you know, you'll go to a really nice prison where it's just like being not in prison. Go to a real nice place, but you're still in prison because the birth and death cycle is there. It's not a solution. The Bhagavad Gita solution is sacrifice. Karma Yoga chapter. So offer, by the process of yajna, you offer the fruits of your work unto the Supreme, and then you're not bound to the reaction of the fruits of your work, because you offered to the Supreme. It's liberating from the bondage of work. Okay, then, now what do I do in a liberated, once the soul is liberated, what do liberated souls do? That's a nice question. Because you can practice that here if you just have the answer to that question. Liberated souls make a link. So yoga means linking with the Supreme. And when linking with the Supreme through the process of devotional service takes place, then the soul is liberated even in this material atmosphere. So now back to one of those earlier questions. Huh? And they said, how's that? Because sounds to me and looks to me like you're using something material to get to something spiritual. How do you justify that? How does it work? What's the science of it all? So it's a confidential item of knowledge. But the confidential item of knowledge is that everything comes from Krishna. Because everything comes from Krishna, when something is part of everything, when this microphone is used in service to Krishna, it's dead matter, but it can act in a spiritual way because it's used in relation to Krishna. We discussed in this morning's Bhagavatam class that after Shukadeva Goswami narrated almost the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, at the very last chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami has described all of Krishna's pastimes, not to speak of all the other 9 cantos. And the hearer, Maharishi Pritchett, is in ecstasy. He's in trance. But then suddenly a doubt appears in his mind and he asks, how did this happen? I have a doubt. Because to make this happen, you used your tongue, which is material, and I used my ear, which is material. And then something spiritual happened. How did it happen? Shukadeva Goswami praises Maharishi Pariksit for his nice question. Such a nice question you've asked. You get an A in attentiveness on your report card. Such a nice question that long, long ago, sages were discussing the same question. And when they were discussing this question, they said, what a wonderful question. Such an important question long, long before us. The Kumaras were discussing the same subject matter. And Sanat Kumar said, specific succession, critical, classic question, that if you don't understand it, it's easy to look at devotional service as material. Like, other people use microphones, and other people sing and dance, and other people read books, and, cook and eat, and, everybody does these things. So what makes devotional service spiritual? So Sanat Kumar is the longest chapter in the whole 10th canto, chapter 87, prayers by the personified Vedas, build up to the punchline. The punchline is that Sanatana Goswami says that because everything has its origin in Krishna, if that something is used in relation to Krishna, its spiritual potency is restored and it acts spiritually. But that same something, when used apart from conscious-wise, apart from the Supreme, then it doesn't act with spiritual potency. It acts the opposite. It acts to cover the consciousness of the living entity, acts materially. And so, here's a real simple thumbnail definition of material and spiritual. Spiritual is that which is in relation to the Supreme Lord, and material is seeing something apart from the Supreme Lord. That's what material is. Material life is acting with a consciousness apart from the Supreme Lord. And that consciousness is very predictable. I want to enjoy. Very predictable. Varieties of, according to the modes of nature, I want to enjoy. And then there's different strokes for different folks, different flavors, different shapes, different sizes, different price tags. I want to enjoy. Go back to birth and death. The material joy with birth is here's a living entity that has an opportunity to enjoy. And those of us who are family or relatives or friends or well-wishers will enjoy being with this little living entity that will give us pleasure. They'll enjoy and will enjoy. About enjoyment. And then when death comes, whoops, enjoyment just went away. Now it's suffering. Actually, in between, it's also suffering. And the living entity is just going on to another situation of would-be enjoyment is suffering. But my sense gratification is coming, my sense gratification is going. Means joy and sorrow. And the perspective of a devotee is when one engages in things and oneself in service to Krishna, it's a whole other set of rules. It's called the internal potency instead of the external potency. And that energy acts according to our regard for Krishna. Same energy. Very nice. If you look very carefully at the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, the description of the advent of Lord Krishna. At the end of that chapter, there's some addendum sections. And in that addendum section, Prabhupada gives a very pleasing, detailed explanation of how Yogamaya, when called by Krishna to come transport Baladev from the womb of Rohini, from Devaki to Rohini, that's assignment number one. And the next one is to take birth as the daughter of Yashoda. And then the next assignment is, I'm going to take birth in the womb of Devaki, and after I'm born, from the womb of Devaki, after I'm born, Vasudeva is going to come and change us. You're going to come over to the prison house, and I'm going to go over by Mother Yashoda. And then the next thing, part four that's going to happen, is Kamsa is going to try to kill you, and he won't be able to, because you're my energy. You can't be killed. He won't be able to do it. And after he tries to do that, the next assignment is that you'll be known throughout the land as the goddess Durga, Katyayani, and the external energy. But he's speaking to the internal energy. And then you become known this other way. What happens? So it's one energy, Krishna's energy, and depending upon how the living entities regard Krishna's energy, it's the internal energy, or the external energy. If we regard this microphone as something for other purposes than what we're doing right now, I learned a new term from Chandrasekhar Swami, because he knows a little bit about the youth music scene. And when they're identifying who's which performer in forget which kind of music it's called. What young people in New York City have, they have clubs and they have different bands come in and have a bass player, they have a drum player, they have a lead guitarist and they have a screamer. Used to be lead singer, now it's the screamer. Anger and foul language and anything. The screamer. That's how a microphone can be used in material service. And what it covers the consciousness. Same thing. Spiritual and material depends upon the consciousness that one carries behind the activities we do, or more specifically, the regard that we have for the Supreme Lord, who's the source of that energy. And if our regard for the Supreme Lord is, this is his energy, I should use it in his service, then it acts to liberate. And if you see it in a different way, that's a cover. And there's all varieties of covering. So many varieties of covering. It's exhausting. Even in one lifetime, one can experience so many varieties. And by so doing, one will experience it so many lifetimes after this lifetime. And it's a choice the living entity makes to direct their consciousness to the Supreme or not. So, on this very special day, the birthday of one of our community members, it's a cause for celebration. But in a Krishna conscious way, a different kind of celebration than in the material way. Here's what the Bhagavatam says about birthdays. Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, was full in transcendental knowledge and was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, son of Vasudeva. So there must have been discussion of Lord Krishna, who is glorified by great philosophers and in the company of great devotees. This is 2nd Canto, chapter 3, where Maharaj Parikshit has heard the answer to his questions as at the end of the first canto, and he's now wanting Sukadeva Goswami, go Sukadeva, go Sukadeva, go, more nectar. So he's prompting him to go further. There must have been some further talks between excuse me, this is Sutta speaking, hearing from Shonaka Rishi. So, both by rising and setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. I'd like to read Prabhupada's transcendental purport. This verse indirectly confirms the greater importance of utilizing the human form of life to realize our lost relationship with the Supreme Lord by acceleration of devotional service. Time and tide wait for no man. Tide doesn't wait. Stop. Time doesn't wait. Stop the hands of a clock. You can stop the hands of the clock, but you can't stop time. So the time indicated by the sunrise and the sunset will be uselessly wasted if such time is not properly utilized for realizing identification of spiritual values. Even a fraction of the duration of life wasted cannot be compensated by any amount of gold. If you ask a doctor, please give me some more time, I'll give you any amount of money. If you give him any amount of money, that's not going to buy you more time. Or some time that you wasted, you can't buy it back. It's more valuable than any amount of money, time. Human life is simply awarded to a living entity so that he can realize his spiritual identity and his permanent source of happiness. A living being, especially a human being, is seeking happiness because happiness is the natural situation of the living entity. By nature, we're Satchit Ananda. We want our nature. We can't help but want to be who we are. Like happy. That's our nature. We want happiness. But he is vainly seeking happiness in the material atmosphere. The living being is constitutionally a spiritual spark of the complete whole, and his happiness can be perfectly perceived in spiritual activities. The Lord is the complete spirit whole, and his name, form, quality, pastimes, etc. are all identical with him. Once a person comes in contact with any of the above-mentioned energies of the Lord through the proper channel of devotional service, the door of perfection is immediately opened, and so on. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya sarasya mahato bhayat. Krishna says, endeavors in devotional service are never baffled, nor is there failure. A slight beginning of such activities is sufficient even to deliver a person from the great ocean of material fears. Then this very poetic expression, metaphorical expression, as a highly potent drug injected intravenously acts at once in the whole body, so the transcendental topics of the Lord injected through the ear of a pure devotee can act very efficiently. Oral realization of the transcendental messages implies total realization, just as fructification of one part of a tree implies fructification of all other parts of the tree. There's an apple over here. The tree produces apples all over the apple tree's body. The fructification through oral reception means this, all the senses become illumined. If there's realization, then our activities become spiritualized by that realization, just by hearing. If there's realization accompanied with that hearing. Thus, the sun fails to rob the pure devotee of his duration of life, inasmuch as he is constantly busy in devotional service of the Lord, purifying his existence. Death is a symptom of the material infection of the eternal living being. Only due to material infection is the eternal living being subjected to the law of death, birth, old age, and disease. So, turning our attention away from Krishna brings the problems. I again turning our attention to Krishna is the solution to the problem. The process of oral reception turns our attention to Krishna, gradually gives awakening of spiritual consciousness, realization of that message, and devotional service. And with that devotional service, immortality. No more birth and death. So Prabhupada asks the question in the purport, why does it say that this works this way, a certain way for the non-devotee and a different way for the devotee? Don't devotees also die? As each day passes, are we not one day closer to death? And the answer is, the death of the body is one day closer, but the liberation of the soul is one day closer. No more birth and death. With each passage of the day, each birthday, we celebrate. In devotional service, the celebration is, we're that much closer to Krishna. In a life that's been dedicated to this process of oral reception, carrying that message in your consciousness, into your practical activities, in devotion, you're that much closer to no more birth and death. Then, nice little discussion about the difference between activities of high-grade activities in material existence, like charity, and the difference between that and devotional service. The elevation of consciousness through piety and the transcendentalizing of consciousness through devotional service. Paragraph begins, the materialistic way of pious activities, like charity, is recommended in the Smriti Shastras as quoted by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Money given in charity to a suitable person is guaranteed bank balance in the next life. Good investment, inflation included. Such charity is recommended to be given to a Brahmana. If money is given in charity to a non-Brahmana, without brahminical qualification, that means, the money is returned in the next life in the same proportion. If given to a half-educated Brahmana, even then the money is returned double. If the money is given in charity to a learned and fully qualified Brahmana, the money is returned 100 and 1,000 times. Good investment in your next life. That means you have to take birth again. Not a good investment. And if the money is given to a Veda Paraga, one who has factually realized the path of the Vedas, it is returned by unlimited multiplication. The ultimate end of Vedic knowledge is realization of the personality of Godhead Lord Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. There is a guarantee of monies being returned if given in charity, regardless of the proportion. Similarly, a moment passed in the association of a pure devotee by hearing and chanting the transcendental messages of the Lord is a perfect guarantee for eternal life, for returning home back to Godhead. Madhama gatva punarjanma na vidyate. In other words, a devotee of the Lord is guaranteed eternal life. A devotee's old age or disease in the present life is but an impetus to such guaranteed eternal life. So we're not going to get old, right? We're going to remain forever youthful. Ha, ha, ha. So when aging comes, or when disease comes, it can be seen as something, well, it is, it's foreboding of something that's going to come after that. So it can be something unwanted. But for a devotee, the passage of time, another birthday, is an impetus. If I continue to utilize, or if I can accelerate my utilization of the process of hearing, the process of devotional service, very quickly I'll attain that supreme destination. And the other option is just not an option. The option of negligence or complacency in the matter of making that spiritual connection. Because with that option, according to Vyasadeva, both by the rising and the setting of the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone. It's just life is being taken away, one chip. And you're one step closer to falling off the cliff. Death. It's fearful. But life in devotional service is just the opposite. It's very promising. Once Prabhupada taught like this, it's part of the duty of the spiritual master to, two things, to express very clearly the abject fruitlessness of material activity. Say again in a slightly different way. If one is not convinced about the abject fruitlessness of material activity, if it, maybe it holds some promise, maybe there's some perks over there, then there will be always hesitation on the spiritual path. Or as Jagatananda Pandit writes in Prema Vivarta, he said it's like trying to cross a boat, trying to cross a river with one foot in two different boats. What happens? You can't cross the river and you'll fall in the river. Because the boats are going to separate and you'll fall in the river. You have to choose. Both feet in the spiritual position. And act from that spiritual position. Then you can easily cross the ocean, cross the river. But one should not try to cross the river with one foot in both boats. It's not advised. So part of the duty of the spiritual master is to make sure, to ensure that at least the opportunity is there for the student to understand the abject fruitlessness of pursuit of material enjoyment in the material atmosphere. It's a bad program. Remove it from your hard drive and install a spiritual program. Or another way of saying the same thing, Prabhupada said it, by nature a devotee is materially pessimistic, but spiritually optimistic. Same thing. There's hope. There's light. There's joy in making a spiritual connection. And absent that spiritual connection, one is very pessimistic going down that path. So a birthday for a person like Ashok is engaged in devotional service with his family members, serving all the Vaishnavas who have come for this function and regularly serving and serving and serving. It's causing great joy. It means coming closer to the eternal position once again. And it's a good opportunity to reset the commitment to that mission of life. Because the downside is, as one gets older, it's not like, you know, life gets easier or something. That's cuckoo land or things like that. There's more demands. And complexity of life somehow manages to increase. It just somehow does it. And just end with this. For many years, I had a wonderful service of engaging from 9 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night in book distribution. It was really a joyful life. And one of the places that I would go in the afternoon up until 9 o'clock at night was the JFK. And it was a situation where we didn't have a permit to be in JFK, so I had to kind of, you know, move around like I wasn't doing what I was doing right in the airport. And so I used to listen to a lecture of Srila Prabhupada before going in to the airport with a bag full of books. And I found one particular lecture that was very, very inspiring, so I listened to it again and again for like, I don't know, it was a month and a half. And in the lecture, Prabhupada was saying that this same idea, as he mentioned here in the purport, svapamapyasya-dharmasya-trayasema-hatobaya, if one even does a little bit of devotional service, then one is free from the fear, mahabhaya. And he said, what is mahabhaya? It's seeing the Yamadutas. Because seeing the Yamadutas means you're going down to the lower species of life. But before you go to the lower species of life, you get greeted, you have a reception team, the Yamadutas. And then they take you before Yamaraj, and because of the sinful activities, it's determined what your next life form is going to be, what hellish planet you'll be sent to. But if even svalpam, even a little, svalpam, even the smallest devotional service will save one from that. Then Prabhupada said that in Western theology, they don't like this idea. Because they say it will make one lazy. If you have another chance, then you don't have to be so diligent. Supposing, those of you that are in school, supposing they give you an option. Such and such a date is the exam. But if you don't want to take the exam, you can take it later. Hey, I'll take it later. A lot of students. I'll prepare, but you know, I know in my mind the option is there. I can take it later if I want, so you know. Chances are I'll take it later. So some argue. King Constantine had that idea. He didn't like this idea of incarnation. He told the bishops to take it out of the Bible. They took it out of the Bible. The Prabhupada said this is Kali Yuga. If one is thoughtful, one will understand if you don't complete your business in this life, what's it going to be in next life? Much more difficult. Even in the course of however many years each one of us has been alive, looking at what's going on in the world, and you know, 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, it's the complexity and the whatever you want James 1, the yuckiness of how people are, how people conduct themselves, it's shocking, abominable, scary. And it just keeps going. It just keeps going. Kali Yuga is marching forward. And technology is helping it. Faster. So if one doesn't finish one's business in this life, you can take birth in your next life and continue where you left off. But it's not going to be easier. The situation will be very, very difficult. Therefore, the thoughtful person will finish their business in this one lifetime and go back home, back to God at night, hit the stop button, took my book bag, went into the airport. Okay, let me give this message to people. There's a sense of urgency in delivering the message and imbibing the message. So birthdays are notices. We're one step, one notch, closer to either falling off the cliff or going back to Godhead. So let me sober up here and make sure I'm going the right direction. And let me accelerate that commitment, that activity of devotion, the consciousness of devotion behind the activities of my life. So I can reach the destination in this one lifetime. And is it possible? Absolutely. It's not an empty promise. It's absolutely possible for one who is diligent in their pursuit of the objective and applying the methodology, the science, spiritual science, how to reach that. Very potent, very effective. Okay, so any discussion, questions, anything? Can you remember? Could you turn the fan off? So I can hear her voice. At the top of the fan, there's some buttons. Yeah, that's the one. Okay.
Recently, I noticed that the youth group has chosen a particular topic of discussion on relationship building and also association. So, like what you have been speaking, for anything that we do in this world, there is a material way of looking at it, and there is a spiritual way of doing things. And so when we talk about relationships in our spiritual context and association, I thought if we could get a distinct explanation on that material versus spiritual.
Well, we use the same rule of thumb. When it's in relation to Krishna, that which brings one closer to Krishna, not just, you know, put Krishna in the kitchen and stir, but it brings one closer to Krishna, the path to Krishna is opened, then that's spiritual. And when that path gets covered over, and it's in the darker side, away from the path to Krishna, that's material. Simple. And, you know, within our Vaishnava culture, there are standards of courtesy, respect, qualities of speech that are pleasing and truthful, various standards of conduct, how a friend behaves with a friend, how men behave with women, or don't behave. And there's standards that are part of what makes something take one towards Krishna or away from Krishna. Like a common, not specifically on the topic that you just raised, or that, you know, the application point that you just raised, but there's a common question that I run into as I move around is, with relationships, when one becomes a devotee, and either in the workplace or at a social function or something, or some friend's or family's home, and they're serving something that the devotee would not offer to Krishna, what do you do? Because you don't want to hurt the other person. This is relationships. Well, you don't want to hurt the person's other feelings, the other person's feelings, but you don't want to indulge either, you know, building relationships. So how to make it a Krishna-conscious relationship? Because there are certain things, like say with relatives, it's on my terms, or see you later, because they're still relatives, or the business place, on my terms, or see you later, you're in the business place. You can't just terminate the relationship, because it's not going to lead to Krishna. So it becomes, if difficult. It's a different application point, but it's a principle of a devotee is convinced that if I achieve this one thing, all other things will be accomplished. That one thing is that we become closer to Krishna. That which will enhance my relationship with Krishna. All other things will be accomplished. So, I may not understand exactly how to do in all circumstances, but I have great faith in that principle. And I stick to that principle. I apply the principle in all circumstances. And Krishna gradually, you know, shows and gives intelligence how to do. So, go moving away from that particular example, and there may be, you know, different challenges and different stages of life and different circumstances of life, but that's the principle. I have faith in the principle is that which will be pleasing to Krishna and meets with our Vaishnava standards. Let's say, you know, a very simple rule is if in my case, if Prabhupada was standing right next to me, and here I am in this situation where there's a relationship question, is Prabhupada going to smile or frown? That's, you know, will he be pleased? And that's the standard. Is it going to be pleasing to my spiritual master, this particular relationship building phenomenon, exchange? And if not, then the answer is I don't go that direction. Very simple.
One question comes up. What kind of a youth is ready to go to college in the next couple of years? So far the relationship has been very, very cordial amongst themselves. How do we continue this work when they go on their own different directions?
Well, friendships naturally will continue to a certain degree. Mentoring is a very practical principle. As an example, in our North American Temple Presidents and GBC meeting, there was a presentation by the youth. They had like an hour and a half. And in that hour and a half, they described what they're doing in this regard. And one of the things that they have is, one of the persons that came up to the microphone and spoke was a young man who had done 2 years of study at a undergraduate work at a Bible college because it was, they had a good curriculum and it was affordable. And so he observed how young Christian groups do things and how they have their Bible study groups. And they have small groups of just three people. So he watched what they did and even participated so he could see, you know, how it works. And then he took it back to Alachua, where his parents are from. And he said, let's do this here. So they started, and they specifically chose persons that are not like buddy-buddy with one another. They chose persons that are not in that normal social, you know, tight, socially tight with another person. And took groups of three people, and they, once a week, they get together, and as they said in the presentation, so many times those of us that have been in Gurukul, we go through, you know, we don't know what's beyond chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita because we get a new teacher and they take us back to the introduction in chapters 1 through 6 and then we get another teacher who takes us back to the introduction. So we wanted to know what's beyond chapter 6. So we decided, you know, we wanted to study chapter 7. And so that was their system. And they were saying, you know, it's relationship building. It's like a support. It says, social with Krishna at the center, spiritual support. And it's, they stay on the topic of Bhagavad Gita, with, you know, and they're building relationships that outside the context of that study, there's other exchanges. So, a mentor system, some way that here's another example. The mentor example. I regularly visited Penn State University. One of the students there got his PhD and now he's doing some postdoc in Huntsville, Alabama. Because that was, you know, when he got a postdoc degree. There's no devotee association in Huntsville, Alabama. So he now has a mentor. And the mentor, he's in touch with on a regular basis. And specifically because of his nature, you know, what he wants to do is career path, the person that's his mentor is someone that has done that himself. And then there's another person who doesn't want to go on the same career path, but so he's got another mentor. And we have the mentor practice helps one stay directed, and then this, it can be even telephonical, you know, a weekly telephonic Bhagavad Gita study thing. So if they stay in touch on a spiritual level, not just chit chat, but, you know, what's going on. After Shruti sent me the newsletter, electronic copy of the newsletter, I very much appreciated it and forwarded a copy to Manu, who's the North American youth minister, and said, I think it's a, you know, I know because I know what he wants to do. He wants to promote youth groups in each location. So I said, here's one, and here's Shruti's email address, and the things that are going on at a national level, you can communicate with her and vice versa. She can communicate with him to get ideas of how are other things going on in other places.
usually it's very hard to convince people between material life and devotional life. How do we explain it, Guru Maharaj, to the common man, or you know, some of the newcomers to the Bhakti Vriksha? They say that in material life, you know, everything is tangible, you can see the result, or you can immediately you can see everything, but in devotional service we don't know what it is, and how do you even have, you know, build up faith in that process?
This person, the broad question that you asked, each time you address someone's question, you have to be very, very tuned into what their particular concern is, because each person is going to have a particular concern. So it's not one brush and one bucket of paint takes care of everybody. It's different situations. So that's the first. Just tune in very much to the individual and what their concern is. As far as this specific idea of things material are tangible and things spiritual are intangible, I disagree. The qualitative difference of one who is fixed in devotion is very distinguishably different than one who is fixed in materialism. The qualities carried by that person, the quality of their life, the things that, what it feels like to be with that person, and what those two different persons do is worlds apart. And in fact, that's one of the most compelling things for a new devotee to become attracted to devotee association, to process of devotional services, the qualities that the devotees carry. I'm thinking of a number of newcomers to devotional service, and they've explicitly said, you know, being with a devotee, I've never seen in people that are like this. I'm struggling with the philosophy, but I'm convinced by the qualities of the devotees. And I like this and I like that. I like chanting. I like the way that you prepare prasadam. I mean, not just that they like meat, they like the quality of what we do. It's sattvic. They don't say like that, but it's, you know, very pure. They feel that from taking the prasadam is carefully prepared in devotion for Krishna. But the most compelling thing is the qualities of the devotees. So in many cases, it's not what answer you give them, it's the qualities that you carry as you're giving them an answer. Yeah.
Maharaj, in regards to community development, we have devotees at different levels, advancement. And so along with that comes challenges in terms of relationships, in terms of practicing and internalizing a lot of the various qualities and demonstrating them. How do we ensure that, you know, the community is developing in a positive way and it's moving in the right direction? Because there's always, how do we get them beyond a point of superficial learning and understanding, and making them apply themselves?
Well, it starts, my answer is very much like the answer to Rati's question. It's by example. You know, to build community, it's individuals. And individuals, it starts within. And as the inward cultivation takes place, then there's some progress, and if there's some progress, the whole community benefits as someone is progressing. then, you know, the relationships, the fabric of relationships is respect and service. And if, so, whether, you know, levels are whatever they may be, fabric is respect and service. And then according to the position, appropriate service, an appropriate exhibition of respect. But always respect. And when there's disrespect, or even a softer position of the absence of respect, then it brings disharmony. But if there's always respect, you know, the same thing applies to the question of you. If there's respect for one another, rather than opportunism or something, you know, something or establishing material relationships is that idea. That's not respect. It's selfishness, but it's not respect. Respect, accompanying respect is service. So, I don't know. I have an idea. Yeah, I have an idea. When I'm going to be returning to Chicago on the 24th and 5th, I think it is, the last Saturday, Sunday of this month, September, we can have some specific, you know, congregation or community development discussions, like community and spiritual development. Or like a Friday evening or a Saturday evening somewhere. The strategic planning is going to be changed. Yeah. Gopal Bhatta's schedule cannot accommodate it. So, but I'll be free in the evenings. Friday evening, Saturday evening, that weekend. We can go into this some more. Anything else? Well, this is the verse comes after the other verse. Yeah. It's for one who is Vajate Mam Ananyabhav, it's instantly. How fast? As a classic example, it's what Brahma did by stealing the calf from the cowherd because it was medium. No delay. Krishna corrected the situation. So then, proportionate to one's absorption in devotion and service to Krishna, it's maybe a little delayed. Because if your message to Krishna is, I want only you, then he'll correct the situation. If the message is, well, I want to hold on to some stuff over here too, then it's a little slower. But for one who is Vajate Mam Ananyabhav, it's instant. Thank you very much. You look up. Bye.